Hello, BattleTech fans. This is Travis, and you're watching Renegade HBG. We have a fun episode for you today. We have a watch party of Daniel Bruin's Mech Warrior videos. I'm combining the new generation of animation with Daniel with the original generation of animation. We have Kurt Weldon, producer of the original BattleTech animated series, and Bob Sker, writer for the same, who I've had the pleasure of connecting previously on this channel, talking about the remastering project of the BattleTech cartoon, talking with Kurt about what went on behind the scenes and how the sausage was made, and talking with Bob, you know, about the story and the development and kind of the passion behind that. And both of whom were wonderful guests. I had a ton of fun, and I had the idea of, hey, what if we bring them together with Dan and just sit back? These are guys that are veterans of the industry and know BattleTech. And so it was a great opportunity to kind of get people who really understand animation, who have been in it, you know, in the thick of it, not only in kind of creating it, but in the actual production and distribution of it, with Daniel, and kind of sharing his incredible talent with them. And so we can all just sit back, enjoy, and talk shop a little bit. And so this is also, you know, a chance for me to kind of get Dan in front of people who might be able to kind of help him kind of push that career forward and get noticed by the right individuals. So that was it. We're going to drop you kind of partway into that conversation. Unfortunately, the recording for Zoom did not start the way it normally does automatically. And I didn't notice that until after we had already kind of looked at Freehat, a MechWarrior story, and chatted about it a little bit. And then immediately after we finished watching MechWarrior Revival is when I noticed and kind of got that recording started. And so that's where I'm going to drop you into the conversation. I'm going to start out this, and I'm going to share the MechWarrior Revival trailer. We talked a little bit before about how this was a project that Dan was doing with the Outreach HBG guys for MechWarrior. And they were going to do kind of this this animated series, and this was going to be the trailer for that. But near the end of when this trailer kind of Tops responded to their request to kickstart for this project, and Tops is like, we're not okay with that, you know, when money is involved. And so that series never got produced, but this trailer for the series was. And there's tons of great kind of mech animation, a little bit of kind of what if, you know, could have happened. We'll talk about that a little bit as we go. But that's it. You're caught up. Let's go ahead and drop in. Before we do, a huge shout out to the patrons of Renegade HVG and this channel sponsor, Fortress Miniatures and Games. I love Fortress. I think you guys should buy all your BattleTech product there. Bob's prices are great. I think they're the best out there. The shipping is super fast. Customer service, amazing. I get all my stuff that I need through Fortress Miniatures Games. And I highly recommend you do the same. And you'll be supporting this channel indirectly if you're doing that. And of course, my patrons, you know, and their generous support. I love it when people believe in what I'm doing enough to just kind of, you know, support it financially. It means a lot. It's a lot easier to do this when I'm not having to cover the expenses of all the software and production and all that stuff. So, and that basically eliminates that for me. So huge shout out. I really appreciate it. And yeah, so that's it. Let's dive in. This is a fun conversation. I hope you guys enjoyed as much as I did sitting down with these guys. And let's enjoy some MechWarrior together.
Oh, now it's recording.
Oh, no.
It's recording.
Now are we starting over?
Let's continue naturally from here.
Yeah.
And wow, that trailer just ended. What do you guys think?
That was very cool.
Indeed.
Now, where does that fall in terms of production order with the first one we looked at? Is that something you did before or after?
Yeah, this is the very first big BattleTech MechWarrior project I've ever like actually worked on. Mm-hmm. Originally, this was supposed to be like a trailer for a longer and ongoing series, but like we got about 90% done with it. Like my I was working on it, and I was like working with the No Guts No Galaxy podcast guys, and eventually we heard from I'm gonna reuse the line, the eldritch miasma that is the BattleTech legal situation at the time. Turns out we can't make this thing right now. We just can't. It's not a thing that we're allowed to do. So we threw it out on the internet because hey, we made the thing. We might as well like share it with people. Like have some cool giant robot animations.
The internet is good for things.
When they say you can't do it, what does that mean? I mean, you know, you can do it as fan fiction. You can, as long as you're not making money off it, you can do what you want. Am I right or am I wrong?
He's learned that.
You have to check with Eldritch Miasma.
Senior,
in the legal department.
Yeah, I think at that point it was, yes, you should be able to do it just like on your own time for your own thing. That trailer took about 300 hours to make, and I need to eat. Hmm. So that's really what it came down to.
How much do you actually need to eat?
I mean, I'm a skinny guy.
Let's just check your level of devotion here. I think that's what's up against here.
Right.
I had an actual thought for a moment ago, and it went away. It'll come back.
Don't you hate it when that happens?
It's happening a lot. Okay, so now you have you been in contact with any of these folks subsequently about? I mean, is there a possibility of somebody doing a revived animated series? I mean, honestly, the technology available now.
Yeah, you
I know people would be last more, time more people going, to. Hey, you know, you should do that. It's like I'm no longer the guy, believe me. I could do the budget for you.
I mean,
anyway.
The last I checked, there's another animated show. It's called Hired Steel. They got permission to use the mech models from the latest MechWarrior games. And they have permission from PGI Piranha Games to actually like make the thing, and they are raising money to like make more of it.
That's
so
funny.
That's
funny.
What I know right now.
Because as I think we all know, when BattleTech started, they were licensing things from Robotech.
Yep.
Now here's somebody else licensing. It's just an interesting cycle. It's the circle of life.
What I've found kind of over the years at Renegade HG and just being involved in the community is the general public just doesn't understand rights, and they're so gun shy about what they can and can't do that too many people err on the side of I'm not going to do it, not going to do anything. And for me, having with my career and just kind of the experience I've had in life, I'm more of a drive forward, deal with the obstacles as they come. And I've also dealt with a lot more real world stuff in terms of starting and managing nonprofits. And so there's a little bit more clue in there about what can and can't be done and how things actually work. If you do step over the line, I think people are like, well, if I do the wrong thing, a team of $1,000 lawyers are going to descend on me and take everything I have. And I think there's not a realization that one, you don't matter enough for that. And two, best case, you're going to get a letter and they're going to tell you to stop.
That's very affirming, Travis.
And they're going to tell you to stop. and then you're going to stop or you're not going to stop. And then, depending on that decision, things will go forward. But I think people think that they will be retroactively punished for stepping over that line. And it's just not the case. And it stops a lot of legitimate fan art from existing because people are just like, can I do this? And I've been guilty of the same.
As long as you're not monetizing it, you can do whatever you want. I mean, John Byrne has been doing an X-Men comic for the last 2.5 years, and it's just fan fiction. He's not making anything from it.
Right.
And so Marvel really can't go after him because, you know,
from what I read about Marvel in the day, he wasn't making anything from it then either.
This is
now true. I should be hearing from somebody's attorney over that one, but okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not speaking from any direct knowledge of these things. That was just a glib comment that that I made as the caffeine wore off.
Also, I think that if you create something that is based on something that's trademarked, if you do it like as a one-off, you can do that.
Right.
And if you make enough differences where it's not exactly the same thing, then there's a little leeway that you can have, you know, before they can kind of come down on you hard.
Exactly. So, and that's sort of the next project largely came into that of, I'm just going to tell one self-contained story. Here it is. If this is the last one, great. We still have the thing. We're not leading into anything else. There it is. It's done. And so you just have like little bite-sized like story pieces, which is Travis, I hear you, I understand. I still have that formative memory of being 90% done and reading the email from the Topps lawyers saying you can't do this. Great.
And also, like, I also, this was an interesting period. I spent a year back in the peak world championship world series of poker days where I just played poker for a year. And while you know, there was a lot of contention between my parents of whether poker was gambling or a skill. I can tell you one thing that I learned a lot about reading people and bluffs and taking chances in that year. And it has paid off significantly in my career and just like being a nonprofit and calling people's bluffs and knowing kind of when to kind of push and when to not, you know, certainly as a nonprofit dealing with banks and loans.
Yeah.
You know, I know what you can do before a bank is going to get mad at you and crack down and be like, you know, is like, how much can I push this, you know, in terms of, you know, can I be late on this payment? You know, cash flow is tight, you know, whereas everyone else is like, oh my God, if you're 2 days late, the world is going to end. I'm like, that's not how people work, you know? And so even if the rules are there, you know, whatnot, that's, you know, and a lot of times, and especially with BattleTech, is like the people who are like the intermediaries there, they love BattleTech too. You know, they're fans.
Right.
And so you have to get through them to the people that don't care, you know, where BattleTech is just a line on a you know, balance sheets for them to even be like, yeah, let's crack down.
I'm curious on what you were doing that Topps said you couldn't do it. I'm just curiosity.
That was back, basically saying, hey.
He was counterfeiting money.
Well, I think they wanted to do like a Kickstarter campaign to say, hey, we want to make this thing. And they said, nah.
Yeah. Okay, well, Kickstarter might be a problem.
Right. Yeah.
Although there are people who do these sort of, you know, Star Trek knockoff shows that they do Kickstarters for. And they're actually doing, it's actually, I don't know if they're called Star Trek or not. I think that some of them sort of like changed enough things where they could get away with it.
Yeah.
And so.
Talking about the Orville?
I don't know how Orville is on the air. It's a parody of Star Trek. It's not a parody. It's Star Trek done right, which is something that we haven't really seen much of in the last 30 years. So, you know, God bless Seth MacFarlane. And yeah, I don't know how Paramount's not going after him for it, because there's just no way that he should be able to get away with doing that. Really glad that he is, but yeah, they have these, I forget what they're called, but there was this one Star Trek offshoot thing, like Renegades, I think it was called, where it was all Star Trek actors and they were all, you know, they all had the same ranks and everything, but they just changed enough where Paramount couldn't go after them for it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Star Trek, 2 inches to the left.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think
there's also things like Star Trek Phase 2 and things like that. Right. But I don't know if they use Kickstarter money for it, if they just, you know, just use the money that they had at hand. But as long as you're not making money from it, you know, you can make fan fiction. No one can stop you from making, as long as you're not monetizing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's balances too. You know, I know with Patreon and kind of balancing that, it's kind of a tricky. And then for artists selling their arts, it kind of gets a little tricky. And so I think a lot of people are kind of a little gun shy there. You know, I'm very careful with, you know, Patreon. I think Patreon is, you know, you make it clear that you're supporting the artist to do whatever they want. And then right. if the artist chooses to do this, they can do that. Mm-hmm. You know, and as long as you word it very clear, you know, that that's what's happening, then I think you're okay. But even for me, you know, there's things that I've, you know, wanted to sell through the Renegade HVG store that have, you know, art, you know, related to Mecca, you know, that I'll sell there. And I just, you know, there's no trademarked or copyright items. You know, I'm just very careful. It's all fan-made art. It's sold, you know, it's careful how it's marketed. And I think where people come down with it is when people are like, these are 3D printed BattleTech mechs that we made. And it's like,
that's a bit.
Drop that. You needed to say, these are 3D mechs that we made and you can use them for whatever game you like. Mm-hmm. And that's what people kind of figured out after the last big crackdown when Topps issued the cease and desist.
Yeah.
Are there lawyers in the BattleTech universe? Because I feel like this is an area where the mythology could be expanded.
Actually, I just found this out yesterday. Yes, there are. Apparently.
Because they asked you to stop doing something, didn't they?
No. In the actual universe, this is something I read this on Reddit yesterday. Apparently, because they retconned the BattleTech cartoon into like Steiner propaganda against the clans, the character that in universe was Nikolai Malthus tried to sue to get the show taken down and represented himself in court and failed miserably. Like the actual clan commander tried to get it taken down.
So there was a courtroom bachal?
Apparently.
There was a courtroom bachal. The judge refused it. And
here I thought I was being glib and clever.
I don't know if that's like actually confirmed or canon or just someone Oh, that's fantastic. I love that so much.
That's a hell of an adaptability level there. That's impressive.
That is impressive. That's beautiful.
Yep. The first Somerset Strikers source book is there's a lot of rich information there.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yep.
Real world. All right, we got another one. This is the most recent. This is Mech Warrior Bulldogs. This was something that you know, the Gallery 3025 Patreon, which I created to for people in the community to pool their funds to create commissions for artists that would then be available, you know, publicly. This was Dan was one of the earliest, I think, might have been the first recipient, and Dan had gotten about halfway through this particular animatic, and we were able to kind of use that, you know, to give him a grant. You know, to give him the time that he needed to finish it out. And so
the last like minute and a half of this film is thanks to that fund, which allowed me to have health insurance for 3 months in order to finish this thing. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
We got that.
Yep. And so this is it. This is the full. This is the Voltron of Daniel's skills, where we have storytelling, animation, and composition. So the music is his as well. The music is amazing.
Yeah.
And let me get that link.
Feel additionally inadequate. It's just we're lucky I can type.
Look, we got all the audio mostly working. It's fine. I'm not sure if. Maybe like what time this at time of recording, I'm 2 days finished with a big audio project for the Black Patents Legion for Tex. Mm-hmm. So that'll go up soon. Awesome. Anyway.
Oh, we've got the new link. Well,
you've already promised the Tex Talks, you know, parody crazy. And the guys,
oh no.
Guys want to watch it. So we'll watch it afterwards. All right. So we have the link. Let me know when you guys are ready. And we'll.
I'm good.
I've gotten through the Verbo ad. Say the word.
3, 2, 1, go. So good.
Oh, jeez.
So good. Oh, that crescendo when the aerospace fighters come in. So good.
That was crazy awesome. Great.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, that was crazy great.
Thanks, guys. Okay.
Better than some of the take ones we got back from the series. No. Particular studio that I won't mention here.
Didn't that studio have its own quagmire?
That studio had its own quagmire.
Doesn't every studio have its own quagmire?
not so much.
Oh.
Not like this one.
Ooh. This one was special.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
So Dan,
I don't know
this
if
was,
I
this told was
this
how
story.
Long?
No, go ahead. Kurt. Let's talk about Dan. Let's not talk about the quagmire.
Tell us the origin story for this. You know, where did it... how many nights of dreaming this up before we dove in, and then how long was it from start to completion?
So this was the project that I jumped into to keep myself sane through all of the madness of 2020, because mm-hmm. that was a thing that happened. I think I lost my job or had my hours reduced, pay reduced 3 times in 18 months, just because everything went pear-shaped, so that was a fun time. So it was very much I have time, everything's on fire, there's a couple of months worth of savings, I might as well just wait, you know, pop down to the Winchester, have a pipe, and wait for all this to blow over. In the meantime, I'm going to draw something. And I had been looking up a series of classroom lectures by the author Brandon Sanderson. He actually had given a creative writing course at Brigham Young University, and someone recorded it, and the whole thing's up on YouTube now. And he was talking about how he makes his very popular, commercially successful novels and stories, and it's a really simple formula. He takes genre X and genre Y and smashes them together and makes something new, and described initially he was talking about a book where basically you're trying to have wizards casting magic, and they're doing a bank heist in order to hit that. And I sat back for a little bit, and I looked at an old track that I had finished a couple of years ago and went, I've got some new music, instrument gear. I could figure something out for that. What if we do a BattleTech heist movie? And the heist is you have to knock out this anti-aircraft encampment. You have to get past the guards, get past the security, and see incredibly competent and kind of cracked people accomplish some crazy goal and have to, come up with a plan and improvise on the fly and encounter dangers and overcome them and get things coming in and out of left field. And is it going to work? Is it not going to work? We'll see. At the end of the day, you roll the dice and see what happens. And that's what we came out with. So that's what I wanted to go for. I loaded up the music track on a pair of headphones, and I just walked around the neighborhood for about 3 hours. And by the time I came back and was able to sit down again, it was I know what this entire film is going to look like now. I just have to make it. So it's just interesting. A lot of drawing. Yeah.
Mm. So yeah, all the music was something that you had put together earlier, and this was...
It was put together in a more pared down kind of, didn't sound great version. Right before all of the excrement met oscillation, I had been able to invest in...
That's a lot of big words, dude.
When the shit hit the fan, yeah.
Oh, I know. I'm just making that was a compliment.
Oh, thank you. had been able to invest in a nice computer that could handle giant sound files, because apparently writing music takes a whole lot of RAM in a computer, which I didn't have at the time. I do now. So we have that going. I took that track, took the MIDI files of it, threw some giant blaring trombones and French horns, gave it that nice wood block tick 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 sound to everything. Bigger drums, bigger strings, let's go. And we just ended up with what we see here. Just loaded that up and it just started drawing.
Well, the music is great.
It was
really great. And I think it's a wonderful idea to have a piece of music and use that as sort of like how to get your storytelling rhythms down. I think that's very inspired. That's a great approach.
It feels weird to try to do it any other way, and I probably should try, but this feels so much like it's almost like the old like Looney Tunes style of like, this is how we're going to make and compose something, but I want to do that for like dramatic stories and action scenes, very much in the style of Genndy Tartakovsky and all of his just magnificence and everything that dude touches. Yeah. Samurai Jack, Star Wars, Clone Wars, Primal is the thing that he's doing now. Is just the dude can tell a story with an hour with no words, and it's beautiful and really viscerally satisfying and very violent. It's wonderful.
Ben, did you do that?
Primal with... showing? Where is Primal showing?
I think it might be on Hulu or Netflix. I don't know. That might be something to look up.
Hulu seems to have a lot of, not to plug Hulu, but seems to have a lot of the Cartoon Network stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's one of them. I think it's on HBO Max, too.
Yeah. Caveman befriends a dinosaur, and they go on adventures together, and it is... Whew, That series earned its rating.
That's anyway. Primal, you said? I haven't
Primal.
Heard of this.
Yeah. Primal. Awesome. Yeah, so okay. Genndy Tartakovsky is the guy that made Samurai Jack and like the old Star Wars Clone Wars. They gave him a show and it said, be as brutal as you want to be, essentially. And he took that and he ran with it. Oh boy.
I was really looking forward to his take on Popeye, which of course got torpedoed. So
That would have been great.
Yeah.
It was a real thing.
Yeah. No, you never saw the trailer? It was on. I don't know if it's still available. There was a trailer.
I did see that.
It was a CG trailer, which, you sort of wonder if that's maybe a bridge too far, but actually worked, and I love the old Fleischer stuff, so it didn't quite tick the boxes in the same way, but definitely had some of that energy to it. So another missed opportunity by somebody.
And did you do the same and Freehat with building the video and animation off of the
video? Okay. I actually did the same thing for the next one too, but then they went and they retimed it a little bit, and it still works, but didn't quite hit exactly how I wanted. But it was fine. At a certain point, you hand it off to like the rest of the production team, and that is
par for the course. That is how that goes.
Definitely. Yeah. So I for the personal project that I'm working on right now, it was also a question of, this is what the track is going to be. Thank you Garage. Originally I had actually taken the opening track to the 2016 BattleTech game.
Okay.
This is the sort of like sweeping, melancholic, like orchestral rising and falling, like talking about a civilization coming to a zenith and then collapsing down. I took that track, drew out the storyboard, the animatic to what that like original story was going to be, and then went back and wrote another piece of music over that original piece in the same key, in the same tempo, so that it kept hitting all the marks. It was a temp track. It did what it was supposed to do. Awesome. It works really well, at least for like myself. It's probably not super efficient, but.
And talk to us a little bit about that project, and maybe we can watch it, because I think you said that you had the completed trailer music. So
I've got that pulled up at some point. Something that is BattleTech is great. I love BattleTech. I love this universe. You know, every artist has that thing that they've always wanted to do, the thing they've always wanted to make, the thing that I've wanted to make and have filled so many sketchbooks of or with over the since like 2015 is a heartwarming and harrowing epic fantasy adventure where, you know, like heroes and villains and old magics and a world of wonder and mystery and unanswered questions. And everyone is a robot. Everything is a robot. All the trees are robots. All the animals are robots. And they don't even know. It's just, that's what it is, right? Sort of like a tribute to like a Gurren Lagann and like the old Lego Bionicle animations that were going up on the internet in like 2001, 2002. Like that sort of vibe, that sort of theme of like, yeah, we're going to do that. Maybe people will like it. We're working on it. We're getting to it. Awesome. Yeah.
Well, at the risk of self-promotion, and why risk that?
Absolutely.
Have you ever seen Beast Machines, the Transformers series from 1999?
Yes. Like Transformers Beast Wars, I think.
Well, it was Beast Wars, yeah. And then you followed it up with Beast Machines.
Yeah.
Beast Machines was a whole kind of, it's a continuation in a way, but it's also its own, you know, very different thing. But it sounds like the kinds of things that you're talking about.
Yeah. It's largely because it gives you so much more like freedom in character design. Just like there's no wrong way to draw a robot, and you can just sort of do whatever you want with them. And honestly, like things like Transformers are, and like that whole universe is really interesting because you have characters that are robots, and they speak as robots, and they are like fully mechanical, like automated, like they've got all that stuff. But they don't fall into the all robots are Frankenstein and they must rise up and destroy. They're just people and they just have metal instead of skin. And it's not really like, that's not the point of the series. The point is something else. The point is loyalty to your friends and courage and honor. And like, that's so you can still tell an interesting story without hitting that old beat.
Well, on Transformers Prime, Jeff Klein, the producer, his position was, we're not treating the Transformers as robots.
Right.
They're aliens who happen to be mechanical, but they're not robots. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a different kind of philosophy in a way, so that you're not just telling robot stories.
Yeah, I'm kind of following like similar lines. The audience knows that they're robots, but the robots don't know that they're robots. They just think they're people. And it's that sort of vibe and understanding. And yeah, going about it as how does their reproduction system work? How do they get energy? How does their culture and society? They're just aliens. You're right. That's really how you go about doing it. Yeah.
And is that where are you in that project? Is that something we can geek out about here? We can watch?
Animatic is done. Music is done. The first two shots were done in Flash. At that point, I said, screw this. I'm never touching Flash again. I'm moving to Toon Boom Harmony. And the next two or three shots are done in Toon Boom Harmony. I got pulled away by a very big, like a charity project at the beginning of December. So I had to put that aside. And now I'm going to be able to jump back into it, probably starting this weekend. I want to see if I can get this thing done and out the door by like end of January, maybe end of February, probably being more realistic, but we're getting there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And updates to aggressively can promote Daniel's Patreon is Sir Dubdub on Patreon, patreon.com/SirDubdub. And he's been sharing updates on that. So the music, you know, the animatic, I believe, is there as well. There's even a little post-credit scene for MechWarrior Bulldogs.
Oh yeah,
maybe we should pull up. That's kind of fun little scene.
I could pull it. It's been up for a while. Should I pull that one up?
Do you want to share it?
Post? Sure.
I mean, it's been a Patreon exclusive for a while, but we can do it. We can premiere the MechWarrior Bulldogs post-credit scene. But yeah, and then maybe, you know, if you have anything for Scrap Infancy.
Sure. This one does not have music. It's sort of like almost like an animated comic sort of thing. So I will post that up here. Let's see if that worked. Sometimes videos are weird and like, where can you share something? Where can you not?
It's working.
Sweet.
I got it. Bob, you ready?
Count us in.
Not yet.
All right, we good?
Waiting on Bob.
Yes.
Sweet. All right. 3, 2, 1, go.
Very nice.
That was big fun.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Yeah, the second half was new to me too. I hadn't seen I had seen up until where she introduced the Bonds person. Awesome.
Nicely done. All right.
Stuff like that would have been available to you as a Patreon had you been a patron last year. So everybody hop on and see Scrap Entropy is the new project that Dan's working on there.
We're getting there. I want to make sure if we're doing something completely new, I want to do it right. So we're going to get there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Kurt, what do you kind of get as a producer? What's the process for kind of pitching things and getting things to the right people that can fund?
I wish I knew, because yep. I would have done that already. That's the thing. I do know some of the. It's tough because some of the studios, Well, for instance, Nickelodeon was just soliciting pitches for their shorts program. And I don't know that everybody does this, but, you know, I mean, they had, I don't know, thousands of pitches. I don't know how many they picked. A friend of mine happened to get something they pitched selected. So she's been picking my brain. So, I mean, there's that kind of a thing. But it also comes down to, I think, what the studios are looking for as well. It does feel like, generally speaking, you know, if you can get something up on YouTube that's polished enough, and I know that's, you know, a lot easier to say than to do.
Right.
You know, then you've got something that you can point to hits. And, you know, my understanding is it's basically what happened with Adventure Time.
I think that's, yeah, that happened with Infinity Train too.
There's a few things that have gone that route. And because the biggest thing you've always got to deal with is, and, you know, this is, I'll cop to this maybe being unfair generalization, but a lot of creative execs can't visualize things. If it's kind of something, Bob is not correcting me. and so if there is something that's laid out and exists, no matter how many gaps need to be filled in,
right,
that's not theoretical, you know, then you've got a much stronger thing to present. You know, my rules of thumb for just getting across anything is basically, you know, the pitch should be, who is it? What are they going to do? Why do we care? Mm-hmm. Why do we care? It can be any number of things.
Right.
It doesn't have to be a heartwarming lesson. It can just be damn funny, whatever it might be.
Right.
Or really cool. So, you know, if those things are sort of laid out as well in whatever, you know, whatever form you can do it, whether it's a trailer or post-credit scenes, because I can see that world expanding.
Oh yeah.
Then, you know, there's something, you know, there's something there. You thought it through. It's not just, you know, a sketch on a napkin that you think would be cool.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing. I mean, but again, it also comes down to, what are they looking for? You know, are they looking for an adventure show? Are they looking for, you know, comedy? Are they looking for, you know, whatever?
Yeah.
So,
put in the effort. Make something polished.
Well, ultimately,
have something that people could care about, and get
ultimately. And this is a lesson I learned doing stand up. You got to believe in what you're doing because you may be the only one enjoying it. So at least on that level, that substance should be there. If you're starting off to, you know, sell a show, maybe you will, maybe you won't. But, you know, ultimately, too, it just has to be something that you want to do.
Right. Like a wise man told me a couple of years back. You know, everything could fall apart around you, but at least you made that thing and you did it, and no one can take that away from you.
So like, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
That's about, yeah.
Can't, at the end of the day, if you have nothing else, you did the work and you have the work. Everything else is out of your hands.
That was my policy on my X-Men script.
Yeah.
Back in 1990, I was somewhat let down by the Batman movie because I read the script and saw how good it was going to be. Then I watched, you know, the Ninja Turtles movie, which made $50 million its opening weekend, which back then was kind of astonishing. Mm-hmm. And I figured, okay, someone's going to find the X-Men and really fuck it up. So I figured I'm going to write an X-Men script, so I'll know that on paper, at least, it was done right.
Right.
And I wrote my own X-Men screenplay, and that gave me sort of like the cred that I needed to help them develop the X-Men series that they did on Fox.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Is that script available online?
It's not online. You know, it's available to me.
Does Wolverine say the X-Men don't need no whiny brats?
Well, let's just say Jubilee doesn't appear in my script at all, anywhere.
Fun fact, I was called in before the project was actually acquired by Saban. I was called into the VP of Productions office at Deke. And their creative VP was also in there, and they asked me to explain the X-Men to them. So I guess I didn't do a very good job.
Yeah, but I wanted to make sure that it was done right, at least on paper. So I did this distillation of all the stuff I loved from Byrne and Claremont and just made it, like, you know, distilled it down to a 2-hour screenplay. And
cool.
I I think it's worlds better than most of the movies that they made, but you know, that's just my humble opinion. But I mean, but if you love something enough, you just put the effort in it and know that it was at least done there.
Right.
So the stuff that you're doing is fantastic. And, you know that it exists, you know, you made it exist.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And that's like a really cool feeling to, like, at the end of a big thing, you step back and you go, yeah, that didn't exist and now it did. And that's my fault. That's great.
You did the work, man. I mean, that stuff really is beautiful stuff.
Well, thank you.
You know?
So let me take, if we're going to go into generalities about the business, what are your goals professionally?
Honestly,
like a job interview now.
At the moment,
do you have any special interests?
Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
I actually really like doing like that storyboard for Bulldogs specifically, just because like the animatic to like the full on action sequence, that's awesome. That's like a really cool thing to be able to like do and sit down and make. But that took, it's animation. It takes a long time to do. That was about 200, 300 hours of work. It took like a year to make it. That post credit scene, I was able to knock that out in like a week or two, just because it's so much simple. Storyboard would be great.
Please take this in the spirit intended. I really liked the post credit scene far more than the action sequences.
Oh, cool!
Because I love all the character beats, and I love all the character stories are what drives all of this.
Exactly.
And so I was having more fun watching the interplay between them than the choreography, which was wonderful. I mean, the whole battle scenes were incredible.
Right. But, it's an explosion to get people to pay attention, and then you actually hit it with the story.
But that moment where she's in the cockpit and she starts grinding against the wall to scrape the guy. I love stuff like that.
Yeah.
I've
seen how Bob drives. He does.
That was actually a big point of the original, like the actual movie was, I need to demonstrate these characters as quickly and succinctly as I possibly can. The first time you see that pilot, a bit of hair falls in front of her face and she tries to blow it up, but she's got this like glass helmet so she can't actually brush it away and gets a bit annoyed by that.
Yeah, I love stuff.
You start with a character that people are supposed to like and supposed to root for. You start by showing what happens when they face some sort of inconvenience, injustice, or like, yeah, I understand that. I can empathize with that sort of thing. And then you move on from there. And yeah. And
In the next one, a fly has to get in there.
Absolutely.
I want to actually add to what Bob said, because one of the things I was just kind of commenting on in my own mind was how well posed out the acting was in the post-credit scene. And honestly, especially over the last few years, that's been one of the more common notes that I've had directors give to storyboard artists, is to pose things out more and, you know, kind of stressing the necessity of doing that. So, yeah. I mean, that's a very big thing to grasp.
So, yeah, it's acting, it's motion.
Yeah, no, it is.
Physically stand up and do the thing sometimes. And yeah, that helps a lot. I'm so glad you guys actually like enjoyed the little bits of personality that went in there. That was exactly what I was going for.
Yeah, no, and that's starting to get across.
It's refreshing to see animation where the characters don't have big, round, stupid eyes, like a Lower Decks or
like everything on TV.
Be Cool Scooby Doo or every other damn show.
They're very easy to draw.
I think that the policy now is okay, but can a 2-year-old draw it? And I think it's because they want the viewing public to be able to draw it, but also I think they want it to be like, so if they want to hire 2-year-olds to do the show, it'll make it that much easier to draft them in. But
can a CalArts grad get this out? Yeah.
That whole look just leaves me so far behind. Look at what you're doing here, which is like the diametric opposite of that, where, you know, I mean, it's about the characters. It's about their emotions. I really, really liked watching those characters. I found them just engrossing. So,
oh, great.
Yeah.
There's a whole group dynamic going on with all, we didn't even get to see the Centurion pilot who definitely did not want to survive that fight.
Well, yep. I'd love to meet all those characters. It just looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, congratulations. Patreon.com. I don't know how to say this. This is utterly professional, and it's entertaining and it's wonderful. And you know, let me know when you do more of them because I want to see them.
Oh, gee, okay. Oh man, thank you. Okay, cool. Okay. Okay. Yep. All right.
So did you literally not know how good these things are?
I don't know until someone else sees them.
Dan,
you know, it's like you don't know what something is going to be until either until someone else sees them, or
you should find some way to get it over to people at like Bento Box or something. You know, like some studio. Maybe there's somebody would take it and say, if you're going to put this much effort into something, then you're clearly
you might as well do
staff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think your work is terrific.
Well, thank you. We got to work on that self-confidence. We got to get there. We're going to do it. That's the goal for 2023. We're going to do it.
Look, Dan, I'm going to keep putting you in front of as many people as I can until I can say I knew him when.
Oh, no.
Where are you based?
I am up in Minnesota right now. I'm about 5 minutes from the Minneapolis airport.
Cold.
Yeah, what are you doing there?
Flying out.
What's the temperature now?
It's above freezing today. That was really nice, like 37 degrees. Last
week, it's above freezing here too.
Hey, that's real nice for you.
Right now, actually, it's 55.
I was going to say it's freezing here. It's like 55.
Oh, we regularly hit negative 30 like all the time. It's fine. We get to the point where being outside will kill you. So we just get used to that, I guess.
I grew up in Ohio, so it wasn't quite that bad. But I remember one winter where it was so cold that I would spray windshield de-icer on the windshield, and it would freeze. Mm-hmm. Which struck me as a bit meta. So I had to, wherever the hell I was going from, I had to drive with one hand on the wheel and the other hanging outside the windshield and kind of half-leaning out, spraying a constant stream of windshield de-icer the whole way home. And I thought, I'm getting out of this.
I don't care
what's in Los Angeles.
when the de-icer freezes, that's the response to the question, how cold was it?
Yep.
Pretty much.
I've said this already, but I will repeat it. Some people get like feelings of patriotism from like fighter jet flybys at football games. I get it from an echelon of mighty snowplows just roaring up the freeway, like kicking up a cloud of snow behind them. God damn, God bless you, sirs.
Thank you for your service.
I love the smell of functioning public infrastructure in the morning.
I'm imagining Kurt's frozen arm that's holding the de-icer out.
I only recently got the feeling back in it.
Yeah, it takes a while.
So are they big on using salt on the road too?
We actually share, to the best of my knowledge from a couple years ago, we share a metric, like a mountain of gravel and salt with Wisconsin. It's like parked somewhere like near the border. And we collectively just like go and take them. They might have gotten their own recently, but yeah, there's 2, 3, 4 story just towers of salt.
I grew up in New York, so I had a station wagon where the whole bottom, the whole undercarriage was completely just in a way. We just all rusted through because salt.
Yep.
Same thing. And that was where it was a VW square back, and that was where the vents were. So consequently, I was warming up the air outside the car.
I only recently
got the feeling back in my feet.
I just this year traded in a car that had been parked outside in Minnesota winters for 8 years straight, had like 250,000 miles on it, and you could see it like buckling in the middle, as like wobbling around everywhere. Yeah, it was a good time. Like you could see the rust flakes like in your shadow behind you. Yeah, it was a great time.
Oh, such memories.
It happens.
Well, let's get back here. Kurt's question.
Let's get back to talking about cartoons.
What
do you want to do? Tell us what you want to do with your career. Right now, you're not doing it. So,
Right now, I work working like a stable, boring day job. Which honestly, like after all of the tumult over the last couple of years, is like that's fine for a little bit. That was good for another couple of months. I've taken it on as a personal philosophy over the last couple of years of work on the things that you want to work on. If an opportunity arises, don't say no and see what happens. So it hasn't failed me so far.
Have you looked into maybe virtual working is still very much alive and well, even as mm-hmm. the studios are trying to get people to go back.
Yeah.
Have you looked into, going out for some possible storyboard jobs, anything like that? Do you feel like you might have a portfolio that you could present for such a thing?
I would need to brush up a little bit more on, I actually talked to another friend that Travis recommended to me of, I still have a couple of like draftsmanship things that I need to work on and have been working on over the last mm-hmm. couple of years. I need to have put together a portfolio that demonstrates those drawing skills, but I'm feeling close to the point where I'm able to do that. So mm-hmm. did you get on it?
It's important, but it's not always the most important thing because ultimately, and if you'll bear with me for a few minutes, ultimately, and this is a conversation I've had just across the years, what you need to get across in basically all phases is information. The storyboard is the blueprint. So it has to be clear what the animators are supposed to do with the material. Some shows are more forgiving than others. They tend to be zany. Action shows, obviously you need to have clarity of action. And just to take it to an extreme example, on X-Men, where the scripts were sometimes interesting. Larry Houston, who was the producer director, would honestly stay up till 3 a.m. drawing, things that he thought should have been in the scripts that weren't, which is not to say they weren't, that they were bad scripts. They were fine scripts. It's just, there were, some gaps to fill.
Yeah.
And also just some opportunities to riff on that he wanted to run with.
Yeah.
And it was amazing that he would do stick figures. Mm. But in those stick figures was all the information that the animators needed.
Yeah.
Cast of, expression, posing. And it was just, it was if this isn't too paradoxical, crude, but polished. But again, the information was there. And and this may be something you're already aware of. Every board artist I ever worked with who did anything with action adventure had on their shelf a copy of How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way. So, I don't know if you have that already. I don't know how.
I don't believe I actually do. I've got the Richard Preston Animator's Bible and a whole bunch of other stuff on top of that. How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way.
Well, a lot of those guys, too, had come from Marvel, too. Larry Houston being a case in point. Rick Hoberg is another one who did a lot of boards on X-Men. Every time I tried to get him to a board, he was too busy. Stuff like that. So, I mean, it's not necessarily draftsmanship per se, although that can't hurt. It really is, what is your sense of cinema and composition?
Yeah.
And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, yeah, I think you got a pretty good one.
Well, thank you. Okay. Cool. It's interesting. Did he like make edits to the script as he's drawing these boards out till late at night as well?
He would, and I don't know how much of this he wants me to air publicly. He would go through the recording scripts and pull out lines of dialogue from other shows and sometimes pull out, just like blown takes from other shows to drop into the thing. And honestly, in some cases, it felt like he was pulling, half the story out of his back pocket, to put it politely. So, there's definitely the things fully fleshed out on that show in a way that I don't think they usually do. And that was purely because of the way it was totally a labor of love for him too. So
I say that because that sounds eerily similar to how that Bulldog scene actually got, that post-credit scene actually got made.
How about that?
Yeah. I was like, I had like a rough script worked out. It was going to end in one particular direction that was like kind of like saccharine and trite. It was like, oh, it's fine. It's whatever. And I am writing the little comic book word bubbles as I'm drawing the characters out and they're like posing and expressing themselves. And about halfway through, like you've talked to writers, and writers will occasionally say this character like grabbed the script and just like ran with it and like went out the window. Like Amaya, the girl who's trying to like get an elemental bonds person, said, actually, I've got a lot of trauma here from that whole Turtle Bay incident. Let's just touch on that, and we'll just work our way into there. Yeah,
the way you handle those captions actually was really, really very effective too.
Yeah,
I mean, that was nice. I mean, there was pacing to that, which is pretty impressive, and I could hear the characters.
Yes.
If I'm going to have a voice actor, I'm going to pay them properly. I can't do that right now, so I'm going to make do with the comic book. Yeah.
Well, I'll say, I'll kind of focus what I think I've heard here and what I believe, kind of as someone who's seen you, is that I think your talent is there. Your talent is in the storyboarding, the composition, Bob and Curry are saying, and character placement, the expressions. I know the last friend I put you in touch with was Kurt, our Jeff Wemester, who's over at Warner Brothers. I don't know, Kurt, you interact with them, but Jeff had
they won't return my calls.
They don't, bastards. But Kurt's feedback was just kind of polish up your drawing. Yeah. I don't think you need to do that. I don't think you should be the one drawing your animation.
That's what Jeff said.
Yes, I know. You told me what he said, and I didn't agree with that. And so, I'm glad to have Kurt and Bob here, because I think, Kurt, appreciates the grand scale. Bob appreciates the character development specifically, and you have those. Like, if there's a reason I say you're my favorite BattleTech creator. Hired Steel looks great. Hired Steel is a fraction of what you do, Dan, and I think the skill is there. I think, put your stuff in front of people, and maybe if Kurt can help you find those people, or Bob can help you find those people, you have the skills. It's the problem now is not developing those skills further. It's putting them in front of the right people who can give you the resources you need to express them properly and naturally develop them in time.
But regardless of where you are, it's essential that you're going to pick up seasoning in an actual production environment.
Oh yeah.
So it's always about, what are you bringing into it that can be built on? And just so frequently, for storyboards, at least, the entry level gig is handling revisions, which is, important. I'm in a position now where, surprisingly, in all the time I've been in this business, I never had to do evaluations of people. When I talk to directors about storyboard artists as part of their evaluations or revisionist specifically, it comes down to just a lot of the same skill set as storyboard. But again, it's just getting now exposure to the full process and the kind of schedules and turnarounds that go on in a series. But it's taking, the director's input and running with it. And, if they're running with it the right way, that input becomes less and less. And gives people a chance, anybody in that position to show off what they do with character and staging and so forth.
Yeah.
It makes the director's job easier to know where revisionists or board artists, for that matter, are going to fill the gaps and recognize and fill the gaps. And, that's sort of the, I don't want to say the standard path, but definitely that's a likely one.
Good to know. Thank you.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And then, storyboard artists do it long enough. Somebody says, hey, you could probably direct this show. Mm-hmm. And there you are.
Oh, man.
Living the Hollywood lifestyle.
And then Burbank, we'll get to see
North Hollywood.
Then we'll get to see an epic adventure of friendship and loyalty with robots.
With robots. There it's you just go. All robots all the way down.
There you go. There you go.
Awesome. Sweet. Well, that's a great place to wrap. Your time is so much appreciated, Bob and Kurt and Dan.
Thank you so much.
Well, as I've mentioned in the past, I'm always happy to just spout off.
You're very entertaining to listen to. Is anyone like actually said?
Nobody who's willing to write a check.
Very good. Well, thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it. You know, we'll be in touch some more.
Well, thanks for inviting us to watch these. Yeah, you know, too. Dan, congratulations. I mean, this stuff is quite masterful, and I'm deeply impressed. And I just think you've just done an amazing job here. So congratulations. Keep working.
And since Bob's a good writer, I have nothing to add.
Excellent.
Great. No notes.
No notes. Exactly. Yeah.
And for those watching, if you want to help Dan in his journey, patreon.com/sirdubdub. I'll put the link in the description. You know, give your support if you can, and you can get some access to this animation. Hopefully together, you know, as fans, we can all help Dan achieve his dreams and give us more amazing animation to enjoy. So thank you, everybody. Thanks, good night, gentlemen. Just Travis signing off.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Take care.
See ya.